Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
C'est un rêve en moi, si vrai, si fort.
If I said to you the words married to the game, what would you say back?
Got my all black wedding ring.
Correct. If I said to you the words black cars, what would you say back?
All black everything.
If I said the words to you in my all black test mode, what would you say back?
Oh shit. What is the rhyme to this? I just been to Tesco.
Yeah, that's it. Those are the lyrics. Thank you.
Okay. Is P Money here today to talk us through that and do like a rap genius style thing?
Unfortunately not. So one of the things that I think rugby is generally lacking in, generally hasn't lived up to, you know, if there's one disappointing thing about the Rugby World Cup, right, is that there are not enough rap songs about teams competing in the Rugby World Cup that name drop players.
Yeah, would I agree with that. I definitely agree with that.
I would go
further. By the way, what was the one of test mode? What was the rhyme for that?
So I'm going at them in my all black test mode. And when I hit them, there's only one way they're going to know. I'm spitting every line hard, Jerome Kano.
Oh, there we go. That's bars. That's bars. You see, we need more of this in the Rugby World Cup.
Desperately, so much more. So we did on 2011, we covered in some detail Scribe and P Money's hit, their big, massive hit, one of the biggest songs in the history of New Zealand, All Black Everything, which was a piece of hip hop music styled about the New Zealand national rugby team, colloquially known as the All Blacks.
Correct. And we even had P Money on the podcast several times to talk through his rap lyrics.
It was a delight, right?
Yes.
This year, heading into the 2023 World Cup, South Africa have an official anthem and Portugal have an official anthem.
Yes. Poor showing from the other 18.
Really, really poor. There may be some we've missed and I really want to hear them. If anyone knows of them, please send them my way.
Yeah, yeah. I think we should now play a game where I'm going to mention a rugby player and then you're going to spit some bars about them.
So, I am a celebrated rapper. I want you to know this.
You are. You are.
Out there in the world. And I'm Squidge or whatever you, Rob, or whatever you want to call me. You are?
I am Will Owen. But you're
the goal
MC
is at some point,
Robbie or Squidge or whatever.
Thank you. The goal at some point is we'll talk about France v Georgia. But
yeah,
we're
we'll
not
get
optimistic.
There.
Yeah. No. So please.
This is how we're going to keep the podcast under 2 hours. But the first thing I'm going to say is, if somebody said something like Bowden Barrett, what would you say?
I would say, wait, do you want their name to be in the bars?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, so I've got to come up with a rhyming couplet about Bowden Barrett.
Well, you can use his name earlier in the rhyme if you want.
Okay.
So you can say Bowden Barrett is really fast and when he's at fullback, no one gets past, or something like that.
Bowden Barrett, he should make a million like Chris Tarrant.
Great stuff, great stuff. Yeah. Okay, how about... So number two, we're going to do three of these, I'm going to say. So number two is going to be Richard Hardwick.
Okay. It's a great pull. It's a great pull. He kills like John Wick. He's Richard Hardwick, and he is going to shop at Wix. However, what you need to bear in mind is that he is Richard Hardwick.
That's good. That's good. I like that. What about Hinkley Valvasa?
Oh, good one. Romania utility back.
Yes.
Hinkley Valvasa. I think it's important we drill this into people's minds. He is class. He is very, very good. And you know what? Do you want to hear some great lyrics
about
shit him?
Bars. All right, yeah, go on.
No, I think it's important that we remind people over and over. People may watch a Romanian video and forgotten about it. You know, Hinkley Valvasa, really, really good utility back.
Yeah.
And Hinkley Valvasa, gonna hand you your assa when he sidestep ya, Hinkley Valvasa.
Nice, nice.
I'm not good at this.
I was thinking more something like, what if I was going to tell you who's a good passer? Well, look at Romania's Hinkie Valvasa.
That's good. That's good. See, yeah. This is why I draft everything 8 times.
You can tell which of the two of us listens to hip hop.
And which of the two of us is a desperate rewriter. Look, it's a first draft, and by draft 18, my work's normally okay.
Your bars will be sick, fam.
Yes. However, I bring this up for a reason.
Okay.
Are you familiar?
Not, yeah.
With the French artist or French group, the hip-hop stylings of the French group Bootyful?
No, I'm not familiar with Bootyful.
Spelt Bootyful. No one knows anything about Bootyful. I've tried Googling them. There's nothing out there. There is one song, and even it's really hard to track down, is basically hidden. Okay. However, this was brought to my attention by Mono_Do on Reddit.
Okay.
Who is a bit of a hero. He's great. He will sporadically share clips from the games that accompany the podcast on Reddit.
Oh, cool. So he's a listener.
Yeah, he's a listener to the podcast.
Hello to Mono Do. I hope you're well, and I hope you're enjoying yourself.
He last week shared the Pez Bomb TM.
Oh, yes, Reddit, the Pez Bomb.
Which we brought up maybe the best kick that has taken place at the Rugby World Cup. So he shared it. He hosted a description of the podcast. I thanked him for it. You know, he's been...
Oh, what a legend.
He does this quite often. You know, he's a bit of a hero.
Oh, dude.
He noted that as someone who used to obsessively watch the Mad Rugby 99 YouTube channel after school every day, it felt the podcast was kind of designed for him.
Oh, yes. Finally, someone else who feels like this podcast is a necessity. Because I'll tell you what, we have a handful of people who listen and they all think it's stupid.
However, he also brought my attention to the work of Bootyful.
Okay.
Because Bootyful, in 2007, released a song titled Hymn France 2007.
Oh my God, wait, what?
And Hymn France 2007 was the official World Cup anthem for the French national rugby team.
No fucking way.
For their home World Cup.
I'm so glad. Like, if we got through this entire podcast not ever addressing this, I would never have slept again.
No. So this was released on YouTube in July 2007, a few months before the World Cup. It got a total of 13,000 views over the last 16 years, which is, you know, doable.
It's modest.
There was like early YouTube as well, 2007. Like, that's pre-Potter Puppet Pals. That's how far back we're talking. Right?
Is it as good as Potter Puppet Pals?
It's got, in those 16 years, a grand total of 22 likes. Though,
oh, yes.
I am live going to give it its 23rd.
Does remind me, by the way, the other day when we were in the office, we were looking at, like, pure, like, accident and coincidence, those old clips that the Rabba Direct Pro 12 used to share.
Yes.
Of just, like, Alberto Di Bernardo missed kick at goal and just, like, really shit penalties and shit tries and, missed penalties and conversions and so on. They would upload individually, which A, says, like, how YouTube has evolved as a medium, and B, that we found it hilarious to just watch these videos really intently. And
Lewis Robling missed drop goal.
Yeah. If anybody can find the comment that the Squidge Rugby official account has left on there recently, then I'll give you a mention on the podcast.
I will give you...
DM it to me.
Okay, no. If you post it publicly or anything so that it comes to my attention, right? Because I am very bad for checking my DMs because you know what? I get a lot of shit in there and I get some very lovely people as well. And I get a lot of people asking me things like, so do you think Lacan Yuam is secretly racist? And I'm like, what? Why are you asking me that?
Whereas if people hate me, they direct it at you saying, can you get that cunt off the podcast?
Oh, so often. So often. I assume it's at me though. So yeah, I'll have to see it publicly, you know, whatever. But I will, if I ever meet you, give you £1.
Okay. I would also give £1. Yes. So if you meet both of us, then you can authenticate and prove that it was you who sent the message.
It cannot be at my house. It cannot be anywhere I live. Right?
No.
Like,
we have to meet by
chance. You tracking me down does not count. Yeah, if you happen to be anywhere I am and you go, oh, I was the guy who found the comment on the video of X, you know what? good on you. I will give you £1. I probably won't have one on me, but I will like get change out or something.
Yeah,
if
all right.
It's convenient.
Or I buy something that is £1.
It's worth £1.
Equivalent
yeah.
value.
Yeah, yeah, I might like stretch like a Greg's pasty.
Yeah, okay, okay, yeah. I would just get you like 4 lots of chewing gum from Tesco or something.
Yeah. However, look, we have dilly-dallied too much.
We have. We
I
have.
Think it is
I'm
time
sorry.
For you to hear Bootyful's Hymn France 2007.
Yes, I am so ready for this. Wait, this isn't original. This was written by the Beatles.
It's a sample. It's a sample.
This is All You Need Is Love. Ooh. Hello, this took a turn. Nimi Atialata in the music video.
Yeah.
More music videos need him.
Here we go.
Oh, come on. I am boogieing right now.
Oh, it's a banger, isn't it?
Oh, it's cool that they're doing it in the order of positions. They're doing the back row right now. Mention David Skrella, please. Champion du monde.
Champion du monde.
Firmly into the outside backs now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what? Serge Blanco?
Yeah, into legends now.
Oh, onto Mac.
It's amazing to think back then he was only a legend. He yeah. wasn't anything to be or present.
Okay, I've just seen a shite try from 1999 in the music video.
Oh, it's
can't
great.
Wait to cover that. Oh wow, I might have just I think I've just seen Alain Penno in the music video. See the guy who looks like Damien Penno.
Champion du monde.
What a belter that was.
Did you make of that?
That was phenomenal. That was genuinely a lot of fun. And look, the bars weren't as crisp as P-Money's.
Look,
I'll be honest with you.
I think it's a proto version of that. The
Very
lyrics
so,
are essentially say hello to the champions of the world, say hello to the champions of the world, say good morning to the champions of the world.
And then they're just
say hi,
the 2007
champions of the world. Then
Rugby
it's just
world
the French
squad.
Yes, but that does mean that it name drops Lionel Boxis.
Indeed, it does. And that is my issue with modern hip hop, is that not enough of it does mention Lionel Boxis. Like, that was really when Jay-Z fell off, was when he stopped mentioning Lionel Boxis in his songs.
It was actually, it was a really core part of NWA splitting up, was that core divide with Ice Cube wanting to be mentioning Lionel Boxis really
fan of
regularly.
Was
he wanted him to be coming up in most of their songs.
Yeah, whereas Dr. Dre, the fucking sellout, was just there like, no, I'm not really sure. I'm a bit more of a fan of Francois Tranduc.
Yeah, and it just became a huge split that led to Ice Cube leaving after just one record and starting his movie career.
And Eazy-E was a bit more Christophe Lemay's on and just, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's why if you go back and watch Friday now, actually, most of the jokes are references to Lionel Boxis.
Yeah.
You know, like it's really interesting that no one's really paying attention at the time because he hadn't yet played for France in the rugby. But by the time he did, actually, and when you look back now, it's really obvious just the extent to which the movie Friday is entirely about Lionel Boxis.
Yeah, and Nicola Friday.
Nicola Friday, also big fan of Ice Cube.
Yeah. And also is in the film Friday, right?
Yeah. And the Fridays, the band.
Yeah. Do you think the Cure song Friday I'm in Love is about Nicola Friday?
Yeah. Well, she's in love.
Yeah.
With being retired from the Irish national rugby team, because that's a shit show.
And extra scrum off Stuart Townsend.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
of course. Yeah. Of course they are. Yeah. It's a fun combo.
Anyway,
so
let's not talk about rugby players' personal lives. Let's talk about the rugby game.
The game today is France versus Georgia, and we get to see some of those names listed in Bootyful's glorious piece of work.
Indeed. And the only reason why we're focusing on that is because, look, Georgian bands, you need to pick up the game. You need to start making songs about this list of names, because then we'll talk about them more, you know?
Absolutely. Look, I think we need so many Georgian hip hop songs that mention, I don't know. Look, I'll settle for like Lobs and Nidze is like a basic bitch version, but like, you know, Georgie Tikaladze, why isn't he coming up regularly in hip hop?
Exactly. It needs to happen more.
And so, look, this is a game that is notable, I think, solely for one thing. Right?
Yes.
Like, we can talk around everything else. We talked around the song there, grand, whatever, who cares? The one thing this game is famous for, notable for, really, really important in the history of rugby union for, is this is the game where Lionel Boxis was awarded official man of the match in the Rugby World Cup.
Oh, hello. Hello, we've popped the cork already. It is the only pool game where Lionel Boxis starts in a Rugby World Cup ever. Right?
Yeah.
100% record, first and foremost. But also, this means that we, at the Squidge Rugby World Cup Retrospective, are here to party.
We are indeed. We are here to talk about nothing but Yee and L for the next probably 5 hours, knowing us.
Yeah, that's the thing. As I say, we want to keep this under 2 hours, because last episode was fucking long, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But imagine how long it had been if Yee and L was playing, man.
I know. So, look, I think it is worth us taking a quick moment to talk about our Lord and Saviour, Lionel Boxis.
I think it's worth taking a bit more than a quick moment to talk about him, but yes.
Yes. So, Lionel Boxis is one of the most beloved rugby players of all time, one of the greatest rugby players of all time, and one of the rugby players of all time.
Yes.
He was a player who was born to the game and also to the town of Tarbes in France, which is one of those towns that you only know exists because it has a team that floats in and out of the Pro Day Duh.
Yeah. Between Federal 1 and Pro Day Duh. Either way, they don't get caught punching front rowers, you know?
They're just up and down, up and down, up and down.
No TMOs are watching out for them.
No. Do you want some other rugbymen that came from that town?
Go on.
So probably the most famous, I guess, is Wenceslas Lauré, whose father did not play for France, despite what we said in the previous episode. The former chairman of World Rugby, Bernard Lepasse. Nicolas Laharage, who won 2 Caps for France.
Oh, mate, I remember Nicolas Laharage.
And his brother, and Julien
Lepasse. I'm going to go as far as saying, good player. I didn't realise he played for France, to be honest.
Yeah, but... two caps.
Oh, was that a Saint-André thing?
No.
Vermont?
No, even. What? It was 2 caps in World Cup warm-ups before this tour.
Oh, mad. Huh.
Yeah. Against the All Blacks, bizarrely. But it must be a rare thing. Players have only played against the All Blacks.
Yeah. But that's fun. Good old Nicolas or Julien Laharage. I can't remember which one's which.
Yeah, 2 caps, both against the All Blacks. A 61-10 loss and a 42-11 loss.
Wow.
But yeah. So look, it's a hell of a crop that he comes from.
And yet he remains king.
The other famous player from the town of Tarbes is Olivier Azam.
Okay.
Who is, you know, some pedigree, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
There's a handful of people who are like France famous comedians and musicians and stuff. To quickly scroll through, like, I'm not coming across anyone I think is particularly famous, even as someone that, you know, like, I don't want to sound like a massive wanker, knows French cinema reasonably well. there's no way to say that sentence without sounding like the biggest bellend on earth, though.
It's however, not much of a flex, I can't lie to you.
Look, we start with Leonel Boxisa's birth on October 24th, 1985.
Yes.
And here's the thing. I don't know why we have BC and AD, why we don't have a separate one for post, the 24th of October, 1985.
Yes, BY and AY.
Yes.
Do we know the origin of why he's called Yenel, by the way?
So Yenel is a kind of joke that sprung up in France. I believe it comes from Yo-Yo and Lionel. because he was up and down like a yo-yo.
I like it. I like it. That suddenly makes sense.
Yeah. But it was a very kind of, he was widely beloved in France as a kind of cult hero.
Like, imagine Andy Goode if he wasn't a dickhead.
Yeah. Which is hard to imagine.
Yes.
So, Leonel Boxis, right?
Mm.
He takes up rugby at age 5.
Yes.
He starts playing at the club Louis Marquisguin.
My favourite club.
Which is a small mountain valley team. Like, the ground is up a mountain. Like,
okay.
I've seen some grounds in Wales that are like that, you know, glorious space. His dad, Patrick Boxis,
mm-hmm.
was their starting fly half.
Oh, what
and
a guy.
Got the club right up to the Pro de Deux.
Oh my
where
god.
They then won promotion.
What a player.
So they were this like tiny team. Patrick, sorry. My brain is automatically filling when it's been Patrice because he's French. No, Patrick Boxis. It just doesn't sound right. It's not the Lionel. Patrick Boxis was like this outstanding fly half. He managed to get his team all the way up from like the fifth division all the way up to the top 14. They didn't stay there very long. They went back, you know, back down.
But that's fine. You don't want to be in the top 14. They've got TMOs up there.
Patrick was famous for how far he could kick a ball barefoot.
Yes! That is the most Leonel Boxisa's baller dad story I could possibly hope for.
So, obviously, Lionel inherited the same gift and very quickly managed to rise right up. So, Leonel Boxis comes through as a youngster where he signs his first professional contract with Poe.
Mm-hmm.
He'd initially played before that at Armac Bingouin, who he managed to win some like amateur titles with before signing professionally to go and play at Pau Section Palisse, where he made his professional debut at age 18 in the Pro de Deux.
What a player.
And at the time, right? Here's the thing. Leonel Boxis at the time had like shaggy curly hair, which is an outstanding sight.
Yes, I can visualize that.
But even more impressive, right? This was back in 2002. Leonel Boxis of this era played with bright green gloves on.
Oh, hello. Again, I can imagine it. I can imagine it.
Yep. There is a clip out there. There's a very good article written by Ovale Mask, who would be a, like, someone we'd absolutely have had on the pod repeatedly.
He would be on this episode.
Yeah. Over and over. He would be on and be an outstanding guest. He's a fantastic follow on Twitter. The problem is we've got to translate tweet. I've had a couple of conversations with him over DM and stuff where we have to like speak back and forth in different languages and hit translate.
Yes.
It's manageable.
Which is the reason why we've not had him on this podcast. The only reason why he's not been on this podcast.
He speaks much better English than I do French, which is going to be worrying to say I'll be in France like this time next month.
Sure,
but,
sure.
Know, there we go.
It's all right. I've got like 20 days to get on Duolingo. Yeah.
But the great thing is, right, he's got in this article that you can find if you start Googling for, you know, Boxis and a volley mask, it'll come up. There is a clip of him as a 19-year-old scoring a drop goal from his own half. Like, sitting in the pocket and nailing this drop goal. He also, like, at the time, had, like, Gavin Henson, like, spiky hair.
Oh, mate.
Which does not look good on him at all. Does not look right.
But that's fine. That's not what matters.
Yeah.
I think what sums up, you know, Boxis so well is that game where he both did the volley kick up to himself from a long clearance kick. Like, he was playing fullback. Somebody did a really long clearance kick to him, and he stood like 50 metres further back in the backfield, right? And he just nonchalantly sticks out his left foot and touches the ball up to himself in his hands.
It's
he did
glorious.
That in the same game as the one where somebody passed the ball back into the pocket for him, and he tried to randomly volley it, even though it was passed into his breadbasket, and it went into his own dead ball area, and the opposition scored. Like, those two things contrasted with each other, and the fact that occasionally he would just nail like 57 meter drop goals, but also he would like slice kicks out on the full all the time and go for like random overhead chip kicks and stuff. That all of this combined together makes Ian Oboxis the biggest cult hero in rugby history.
Absolutely. So 2006, right? He gets into the France under 21 squad to play in the penultimate under 21s world championship.
Okay, okay.
France make it all the way to the final with him as the star player.
Of course they do.
Fly half, right? It's an outstanding, outstanding period of time. It's one of the greatest days. It's something I'm sure you remember very fondly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the more important games of rugby ever. What can I say?
This was 2006, so a year before this World Cup, right?
Okay.
He starts at number 10 for France in this final. His opposite number that day, I'm going to give you, so they're playing against South Africa. I'm going to give you three guesses to select who was at 10 for South Africa under 21s in 2006.
Monet Steyn.
Nope. They are international.
Butch James? I don't know how old he was.
Nope.
No, he would have been well old.
Yeah.
Pat Lambie.
Nope. They go on to play for France.
Oh, shit. What? So that really narrows it down. That means it's... Holy fuck, no. Scott Spedding?
Scott Spedding. Scott Spedding.
What?
Was at 10 for South Africa, opposite him.
Oh my goodness.
And obviously that goes as well as you'd expect.
Okay.
Ian Oboxis is man of the match and scores 24 points.
Of course he was. He was man of the match in every game he played. He was the GOAT.
Also in that team, Sebastian T.S. Board.
Oh yeah,
his halfback partner. In the centre, you've got Maxime Memoz.
Yeah.
You've got Maxime Maidar at fullback.
Yeah.
You've got Julian Adrago in the back row.
Okay.
And in the front row, right, you've got Toma Domingo.
Wow, he's that young.
Yeah, I was totally surprised by that as well. And Guillaume Garrido.
Wow. I mean, yeah, that checks out. That checks out. Toma Domingo was that young. I thought he was like really old in the 2009 Grand Slam. He'd have been like 23.
I did as well, yeah. Which is mad. Like, he just looked old his entire career.
He had old energy, man.
He did. So, Ian Oboxis, right? Not only man of the match in the final, he's then crowned World Junior Player of the Year.
Of course he is.
I'm going to read the bit from Avali Mask's piece on this, but translated into English. Lionel, he is crowned best young player in the world and succeeds a prestigious list of names, including Richie McCaw, Jerry Collins, Jerome Kino, Luke McAllister, Isaiah Toyava, Gavin Henson. This is not a joke. Check Wikipedia. Off the back of that, he leaves Poe, who'd just been relegated from the Pro De Deux, down to Federale One. He signs for Stade Francais.
Yes. Now we're talking. This is glory days, man.
This is where it all begins. This is 2006, off the back of a world championship title, right? And he slowly managed to kick David Skrela out of the team as a 20-year-old.
Thank God. Jesus Christ. Skrela is not the one.
Largely thanks to, there was a penalty from 50 metres in the 80th minute to get a draw against the Ospreys in the European Cup. And that was a big factor in Bernard Laporte, even though he only had a handful of starts at this point because he was behind David bloody Skrela at this point, bringing him in for the 2007 Six Nations. He wins his first cap against Italy, but the second was against Ireland at Croke Park, right?
And I remember how that went.
So this is the interesting first moment. With a few minutes to go, of course, you know this game. You know what this game is.
Yeah, I know what happens at the end of this game. Yeah.
Ireland are 14-13 ahead with 4 minutes to play. Ian Oboxis has just come on for a second cap, and he hits the post with a drop goal.
Oh, man.
However, it's all okay, because France recover the ball, and a few minutes later, like a minute or two later, he throws a wide ball to a certain Mr. Vincent Clerc, who darts through, scores the try, that still traumatises an awful lot of Irish people, because he would have won a Grand Slam if he hadn't done that.
Yes. And look, people call Vincent Clerc the Irish heartbreaker, but no, it's Ian Oboxis.
Yep. And so, look, this means that, of course, he earns the chance to start at 10 for the first time against Scotland at the end of the Six Nations.
Okay. How did that go?
obviously incredibly well. Two penalties, five conversions, and I think the best of the thing. Look, France win 46-19, which is a good enough points difference for them to win the title. They needed 24 points or more victory to win. They trust Boxes. His conversions are the difference.
Yeah, of course they are. Winning the title
going into this tournament.
Mate, what a player Yenaar is. The thing is, I feel like now that we've done all this, like, he has painted himself in glory with the backstory as we come up to the present day with France playing Georgia in the 2007 Rugby World Cup. And the thing is, what I was wanting to say is, like, obviously we joke around Yenaar Boxes being the best, but, like, he bloody pulls the strings here.
He is unbelievable in
this
game.
He's so good.
This is, like, here's the thing, right? Like, Lionel Boxes has kind of become a joke and a beloved thing. And, like, I brought you right up to date on, like, the early life of Lionel Boxes. But, like, beyond this World Cup, he goes on to become a kind of icon for the fact, like, he was incredibly promising young on, and he had more than enough skill, but he spent most of it doing, you know, the E&L. He's a yo-yo.
He just pissed around. Like, that's how he spent his rugby career. Clearly, he got so bored of being, like, tearing it up at international level that he just decided to become a novelty act instead.
It's just absolutely incredible. He was just a really, really beautiful player. And yeah, it was just an absolutely glorious thing. And there's a reason he's widely beloved the world over, particularly in France. Yeah. And this is his second start at 10 for France. He would go on to play for France until 2018. Where they inexplicably recalled him, and he was, like, both terrible but brilliant in that very Boxes way.
He was slightly more terrible. Yeah.
But, like, he was that very Boxes thing where he'd do absolutely unbelievably terrible things, but he'd somehow, like, get away with them.
Yeah. Like, or him, the opposite. Like, he'd do, like, brilliant things that, like, you go, like, that takes phenomenal piece of skill, but that's dreadful.
Yeah. Well, the things that come to mind from that is him throwing this insane pass behind the back against Scotland.
Yeah, where to Jeffrey Police.
On his own try line, with, like, people rushing up in his face, he blind chucks it out the back, like, cat flaps it, to Jeffrey Police of all men.
It's like, and this isn't you, Lionel.
Somehow they get away with it. And then against England, France turned the ball over on their own try line. Instead of kicking it out, because it's full time, he punts it long to Johnny May, who counterattacked scores. I was watching that in a pub and screamed.
Oh, good old Yenaar.
Good old Yenaar. Yeah. Like, Yenaar playing for France, like, obviously he wins his first cap before we were watching rugby. His international career overlaps with the Squid Rugby channel existing.
Yeah, exactly. And when I first started watching rugby, I eventually watched enough French club rugby that Lionel Boxes was a player who I knew was quite good. And then I saw highlights of the 2007 Rugby World Cup and was like, oh, okay, so I guess he used to be their fly half. Then assuming he was really old. And then when he just get occasionally recalled, for, like, once every 4 years after that, I just found it increasingly hilarious.
It's just an incredible thing. A couple of years after this, Marc Lievermont, for It Is He, would name him the only fly half in their squad for a while and still drop him.
Like, oh, he found his way back onto the podcast, Lievermont.
It's a match made in heaven, Lionel Boxes and Marc Lievermont.
It certainly is. Look, we're looking at the French team right now.
Yes.
And I've got the French team in front of me, right? I'm just going to run through some of it. So at 10, they name Lionel Boxes.
Yes.
And also at fly half, they name Lionel Boxes as well. Yes. And I think the most interesting selection is in the standoff position where they name Lionel Boxes.
Yeah. It's really, really fascinating the way the outside half is Lionel Boxes, considering in the previous game, the outside half wasn't Lionel Boxes, but this time the outside half is Lionel Boxes. I think it's an interesting call at Dr. Tactics to put Boxes in, but I think he really complements Boxes at 10.
Yes, I definitely agree. Is that still on the French team?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, like, look, it's a needlessly strong team, but also it's kind of what the French team becomes after this World Cup.
Sure.
By and large, you know, like, other than you probably swap Trandouk in for Boxes. You know, like, Dominici retires, but after this, like, Zhoujon becomes first choice after this World Cup.
Yeah.
David Marty hangs around, gets far more game time after this World Cup. Aurelien Rougerie. Yeah, kind of moves into 13, but he's like an absolute fixture. He's kind of in and out a bit more in this World Cup. Poitrineau becomes the first choice fullback after this World Cup.
JB Poo
and Nalle are the starting. Yeah. Jean-Baptiste Poo, Nyanga and Bonaire become fixtures after this World Cup. Betson is captain. Obviously, he drops out for Dusto to take exactly that mantle.
Yeah.
Sebastian Bruno, likewise, you know, Servat kind of carries on for longer than I think people were expecting, goes on to the following World Cup. And likewise, Nicolas Mahut comes in off the bench.
Yeah.
Broadly, like, this is, you know, once Vincent Auclair comes on, this is largely the French team that goes on to win a Grand Slam in 2010. Like,
it's a very fun team, isn't it? That they name. And it really, they do live up to the billing, I think. It's a great France team. They're so entertaining to watch.
Yeah. However, I do think we need to talk more about one particular player on this team who we haven't really talked about.
Okay.
That is Lionel Boxis.
Yeah. Okay. We've talked about him a little bit, but yeah.
Well, okay. So I just want to run through a couple of Boxis facts that we haven't mentioned, right?
Okay.
Mary Alice Yahi. You know her?
Yeah.
Scrum off, former captain of the French national women's team.
Okay, I actually didn't know who that was, but yeah.
No? Yeah. She captained them like 30 times. She was like a really big like figure in the growth of...
Okay.
You know, like an equivalent of like Catherine Spencer or something, you know, that kind of era.
Yeah, sure. That's pretty sweet.
You know, French rugby. Yeah, was like a big figure, big captain in like the first televised France women's games when the crowds first started to grow to the point where, you know, by the time I think England started really catching on in the last 5 years, by that point, French women's rugby had already exploded. She was a big part of that. She was the captain for a lot of that era of like, it's first starting to grow where it kind of is where like Scotland and Ireland is at the minute, you know, kind of starting to pick up. So, Lionel Boxis was asked when he retired if he had any regrets from his career. And he said he had one, right? Which was at the 2007 Rugby World Cup. He found himself going out more than he would have thought. Before he started playing professional rugby, he was apparently incredibly focused, never went out, never drank, never did anything. Then somewhere he met Mathieu Bastereau.
Okay.
When he was at Stad. And apparently the two of them went out a lot. And
over the 2007 World Cup,
the combination of... Yeah, I mean, he'd trip over when he was drunk and say it was actually policemen beat him up.
Of course. What a cabbage.
So over the 2007 World Cup, right, Boxis was so focused on the combination of playing rugby for France and drinking beer that he completely neglected his girlfriend and reportedly just wasn't speaking to her.
Oh,
which
that's
is
shitty.
Like a really French thing. And he said like it's the biggest regret of his life is how he treated her during this World Cup because he was so focused on playing in a World Cup and all of
that. Okay.
And yeah, so she left him during this World Cup between the pool stage and the quarterfinal.
Shit.
Which is another interesting fact there. Yeah.
Oh, God, that's rough.
Which it sounds like it was entirely his own fault. And you know what?
Yeah. Of course.
He said it was something he really learned from. And he said, biggest mistake of his life. However, right, it did mean that a year or two down the line, in about late 2008, Mathieu Bastereau brought him on another night out with members of the French women's national team.
Okay, I wondered why you brought her up.
Where Lionel and Marie-Alice Yahe would meet.
Okay.
So, after Lionel Boxis being desperately sad for like a year after he was an idiot and he didn't treat his girlfriend properly, he meets Marie-Alice Yahe and the two of them hit it off immediately.
Oh, lucky woman. Lucky woman.
They go on to get married, you know, like a year after they meet, and they've been together ever since.
Mate, imagine marrying Lionel. Fucking baller move that is.
I have.
Yeah.
So they've been married for almost 15 years now, and they were kind of like considered, you know, the first couple of French rugby. You know, it was like a really rare thing have that kind of, you know, like the goodies almost of French rugby.
Sure.
I'm desperate for their kids to come through someday. They've got like halfback. There are a couple where they're halfbacks, you know, one was a scrum off, one was a fly half.
That's incredible.
Which must be rare as well.
Yeah, that's legendary.
The Ovalie Mask piece describes them as the second most beautiful couple in rugby after Maxime Machinet and Yohann Huger. So, yeah, look, early feminist icon Lionel Boxis after recovering from being an idiot when he was like 19.
Yeah.
look, I just want to paint a picture of Lionel Boxeas, because I think he's a wonderful, wonderful rugby player.
Yeah,
and
he is.
Became a wonderful man if he wasn't initially.
Yes.
No, he was, then he got corrupted, then he came through the other side, you know, because he's a good guy. He's Lionel. And I think there's another big part of it is, like, he is, by all accounts, like a really decent and quite boring man.
Yes. But, like, he looks it. He look at his face. He does not look like an interesting man.
He's got
he looks
kind
like
of,
a French fly half.
It's the same way Stephen Myler became a cult hero in the UK.
Yeah,
you know, of
being
like
so bland,
just being such a boring rugby player. Like, he plays rugby, Stephen Myler, you know, he plays fly half, the most exciting dynamic position on the field, the most important, like, glory position, and he plays it like it's Friday and he's about to clock off and he can't
he
wait
plays
to go
like
home.
A 9 to 5, honestly.
Yeah,
there was a point where he was asked in an interview if he has any nicknames and he said Stephen.
Yeah.
Like, that's just your name. And he just has no one calls him anything but Stephen. Whereas at least Yeonel has Yeonel, you know?
Yeah. People don't call him Stephen Myler. That's the thing. That's the nickname. They don't call him by his full name.
It's true.
So let's look at the Georgia team, right? Let's whiz through this.
So Georgia, half of their team is changed, you know, like people who haven't had much of a run out yet in the World Cup. And half of it is people who are absolutely dead from the last few games.
Yeah.
So it
is
quite
5 days after the last, 4 days after the last game.
Yeah, yeah. And it is quite disappointing because we don't really get Georgia bowing out in the way that they deserve from this World Cup. And, like, to unfortunately preface it, 90% of the talking about this game we're going to do is going to be us talking about France and French players.
I'll say this, right? Georgia have had a fantastic World Cup, the World Cup where they really announced themselves.
Yeah.
I think they're superb throughout. You know, they give Argentina a more difficult game than you'd expect. Then obviously the Ireland game is very famous, where they really pushed them. They could have, maybe should have won that game.
Incredible.
Just like one of the great underdog performances in the World Cup, where they were such outsiders and they hold Ireland to 4 points in the end.
Yeah.
And leave them after an hour. Just amazing. And then obviously they have the phenomenal 30-0 win over Namibia, which that was the target going into this, was to win that game. And they figured it would be by a low margin, has them going for goal constantly.
Sure.
And they just pull away and they like, they have an unbelievable day and you've got their fans in the stands, can't believe what they're seeing. They're winning a game at the World Cup and in such style, right? And then 4 days later, they've got to go out and play the home nation, France. And look, there's an element, as you say, of them playing the kids. There's an element of them being knackered. There's an element of them possibly being hungover.
Yes.
Georgia in this game are rubbish.
Yeah, they're rubbish.
They're terrible.
It. They're nothing. They're nothing. Yeah. It's like watching... My thought during this is it is a bit like what hammering in 1987 was like, where you only really see one team in it. And the tries they're scoring aren't because they've done anything particularly inspired, but just because their skills are better, you know?
Yeah. I don't think there's that much to say about this game in a weird way.
Yeah.
Which means we'll keep this episode to like 3 hours.
Yes. But the Georgia team, right, we'll talk about that. So... the back line is mainly players that they're maintaining from past games. So you're looking at Irakli Abusaridze maintaining captain, Merab Kirakashvili at 10, Urjikashvili moving on to the wing, having played previously at fullback and centre, Gigauri, having played at fullback, moves into the centre. There is a lot of moving about here with Otar Bakalaya coming in at fullback.
Mm. It's still a decent team. Like, there's a lot of good players in there. Yeah, Bakalaya is probably the least celebrated player in that back line.
Yes, I'd say so.
Who is coming in here.
I'm not familiar with Beso Kamshiridze, the left winger, but...
Yeah. No, I mean, neither actually. No, that's fair. No, he's probably less so than Bakalaya. But yeah, there's a lot of players who have really solid career. You know, the Urjikashvilis, the Giagadzes, the, particularly Mabkovic-Ashvili.
Giagadze, who was brilliant against Namibia, by
the way. As well, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, like there's some, you know, players that have had really good careers for Georgia, both in that era of them first coming up and first getting into the World Cup, in, you know, the likes of Abusaridze. And then the players like Merab Kvirikashvili, who go on to be part of the push towards them becoming the team they are now.
Yeah.
A big, like, transitional player. Mamuku Godze rolled his ankle in training just before this game, so pulled out the day beforehand.
It's unfortunate.
Ashid Lobzinidze, not Lobzinidze, sorry, Labidze, the number 8. Both big losses, I think. Both would have played in this game. But it does give a few players, you know, so Victor Dibadwudze gets a chance to come in the second row. And there's a few players like that who don't get many chances. And like, the other thing about Victor Dibadwudze, who, right, he was part of the very first Georgian squad.
Okay.
In 1991.
That's insane. 1991. Yep. That's Alan Wynne-Jones' length of career.
Yeah. So Georgia declares independence on the 9th of April, 1991. Right?
What a player he had to be at that point to maintain that through to the professional era.
So he wins his first cap for Georgia in November 1991.
Wow.
Georgia had been a country for 6 months.
And yet he carries all the way through to here. That's incredible.
So, like, you kind of feel like he played in 2003 World Cup as well. But you kind of feel like he's due a start in this World Cup.
Yeah,
you know?
Damn
for the
right.
sheer effort. Like, you talk about servants playing in their first ever game and then carrying on and playing in two World Cups. I doubt there's anyone that's ever done that, you know?
You know, he'd have been growing up saying, like, oh, if we ever become a country, I'd love to play for us.
Yeah. So he was the 36th man to ever play for Georgia. He
That's
played
wild.
In their third ever game.
What?
Their third ever game. He started, won his first cap against Ukraine on November 24th, 1991.
That's incredible. What a guy. What a player.
Yep. Like, and he went on, you know, so like the player from that era who had the next longest career was Palico Zimziadze, who also goes to this World Cup, but doesn't play that much. He was the first choice in 2003, then kind of drops out by 2007.
Okay.
He's, you know, not around that much here, but he won his first cap in 1995, which is still a hell of a career, you know, 12
years.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, for sure.
And to have been playing when your country's only been around for 4 years.
Yeah, but the, right.
Just like the sheer act, you know, of like our country's existed for a couple of months.
Yeah. Like at that point, he's essentially a ringer for like a second team or a third team. You know, when people are really full stretch.
Yeah. And like the other fun thing is Georgia played an unofficial test match before they declared independence, just as a kind of like breakaway. We said rugby was always in their blood, wasn't it? But yeah, it's just like it's a hell of an effort. Like he is, and he deserves to be viewed as an utter legend.
I'm so glad that you dug that up say. For this podcast. Yeah. And we'll come back to him another time.
Yeah, he comes off at halftime. And you know what? You can't say fairer than that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like give him a token cap.
Yeah.
So he's gone
to this point, he's 36. You know, like he's knackered. Can you blame him?
Absolutely not. That's brilliant.
Managed to carve out a bit of a career in the Pro Day Dirt as well. Played for RC Massey.
He's ticked all the boxes for what Georgians now dream of.
Also played for Tarbes in the Pro Day Dirt.
Oh, yes.
Or the Nationale at the time. Yeah, he was very much kind of set the template. He was one of the first professional Georgian rugby players, and he went on to kind of build that up and keep that going until this era where he's playing with bloody Gorgodze and he's playing with Merab Kvirikashvili, players that go on to change what Georgian rugby is and how it's viewed forever.
That's brilliant. That's
if
brilliant.
If rugby don't ruin it, of course.
Of course, of course. That's incredible. What a guy.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So we then get to the anthem.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing, right? We heard the French anthem being sampled at the start by Bootiful.
Indeed.
They go almost one further during the French anthem here. Were you paying attention to this?
What about it?
They have interpretive dancers.
Oh my God, yes, 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 yes. Yes, sorry, they do. I completely forgot about this. Yes, so it's for sign language interpretation.
Really?
Yes.
That's it?
Yeah, but they just go over the top.
That is insane. I mean, also, it's great. More people should be doing this. Everyone should be doing this, in fact. Why isn't everyone doing that? Like, why don't you have sign language interpretation for the anthem?
It was incredible. I loved it.
Me too. I thought it was just interpretive dance, and I loved it.
Yeah.
But it's an accessibility thing as well. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's two birds with one stone. It's both entertainment and it's doing a service.
That's phenomenal. Everyone yeah. should be doing this. Bring that back. Bring back Bootyful and bring back interpretive dance for sign language.
If France don't do that, the ball's in their court. Sign language, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah. Like, they're hosting a World Cup in a month, bro. Just for one game.
Every anthem.
Yeah, even just for one game, just do it. I want to see it so it makes it memorable.
Yeah, I will learn Land of My Fathers in sign language dance version.
Exactly, exactly. It's like how at Glastonbury every year they do the flash mob dance where the security will dance along to one song.
Yeah.
Typically with a legend slot. Like, they need to do that and just go, right, okay, this is the dance that we're going to do on Saturday when France play against Georgia. Just join in the crowd if you want to.
Yeah. Phenomenal. Bring that back. Do more of that. Right, we then get to the kickoff and there's something else we should bring back, which is...
Well, even before we go into the kickoff, have you seen the other thing that happens in the period of the anthem?
Which is?
Well. Chicken on the pitch!
Chicken on the pitch? How did I miss the chicken on the pitch?
Chicken on the sideline.
Chicken on the sideline!
There's... someone on the front row in the crowd who has a chicken that they're holding up and they're just showing them to the interpretive dancers and going, look, we've got a chicken.
Oh, yeah. My brain didn't even register that was interesting. It was like, oh, yeah, they've just got chicken. It's France.
Chicken on the pitch. And we saw this in the 1987 Rugby World Cup final.
Yes, we did.
This is disappointingly the first time we've seen it in the 2007 tournament.
How?
However, I'm glad because, like, 2011. Fucking shit tournament, shit World Cup. Didn't have a single animal
what,
come off the pitch.
No, there was. There was the French fan that got banned for trying to smuggle a chicken into the ground.
Yeah, exactly. They took preventative measures to stop people from bringing animals into the ground and onto the pitch. And look, people who are listening, if you're going to the Rugby World Cup, please get a dog on the field. Like, please. I put our tweet up at us the other week because I really want a dog to get on the pitch so it's in the law.
Yeah, we've got to do this.
Whenever that.
Because this is the weird thing, right? Of like, we've got this World Cup coming up that one day we'll be covering in the law of this podcast
exactly.
And talking about in past tense in the way that we talk about these games as like artifacts.
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's face it, right? None of these games that we do these podcasts on, none of them actually happened, did they?
No.
None of them are real.
The only one that happened was France USA in 87.
That's true. But like, none of them are real. They're just like, they've just been AI generated for YouTube so we can cover them in podcast form. But these ones are going to be real. And one day we'll talk about them. And we can make an impact on that. And if I want there to be an impact on that, I just think we need more dogs on the pitch.
And like, there's something different, right, before we're doing this podcast of the 2015 and 2019 World Cups, where I went to games in both and you went to games in 2015, right? Those games I didn't know we'd be covering on a podcast retrospectively one day.
Exactly. Like, this is going to be the first men's World Cup with the existence of the podcast.
But like, so if I threw a paper airplane onto the pitch, which I've seen happen in, you know, other sports and other...
Yeah, programs, yeah.
That would come up in the podcast in how many of a year's time.
Exactly.
We need which to now makes me want to do
happen,
it.
Man. But dogs.
Dogs is the most important thing.
Dogs on the
we
pitch.
We need a dog and we need it on the pitch and we need it as soon as possible.
Yes. So, you know, good listeners of this podcast, get to work, please. But for the time being, chicken on the pitch.
Chicken on the gosh darned pitch.
And look, we always name these animals. I think there's only one thing that we can name this chicken.
Oh, of course. Well, no, there's two options, right? Do we name him Lionel or Yeanel?
I think he has to be Yeanel.
He's Yeanel.
Yeanel
the chicken.
On the sideline. What a performance he puts in.
Yeanel le coq.
Oui. So you mentioned something about the kickoff.
I did indeed. So yeah, three things we need to bring back. Interpretive dance for sign language interpretation. Lionel Boxis and chickens.
Yes.
Because the kickoff happens and Lionel Boxis. It's just so here's the thing, right? If we were to talk about this game just like straight up in order and just run through it as we do in like big games where we run through this on the podcast, right? It would pretty much be Lionel Boxis knows a beautiful touch finder. George's line out slash attack is terrible. And then France scores some beautiful carving try, usually through Jozion.
Yes, and rinse and repeat.
Yes. Like, it's a very repetitive game.
Yanel gets his first penalty and I'm obsessing over him, thinking that's the only good thing he's going to do in the game.
Yep.
And every time something added to it, it just felt even better. He put in like a mega clearance afterwards. He was putting in some huge kicks early on. It was brilliant.
Yeah. Well, and his penalty early on is really difficult. Like, he drills it, you know, he's on the five, glorious, beautiful, are the words I've got written in my notes, because I need to remember them when thinking about Lionel Boxes.
Yeah, and he just, like, lovely penalties in the first half.
He does. So one for 4 minutes, one for 18 minutes, and it really builds the scoreline, I think. It kind of gets France out to quite a commanding lead.
Certainly, certainly. Like, there was a point where I wrote down, wait, 30-0?
Yeah.
When you realise, like, how have they got that far up? Because they just got their third try. Like, they weren't looking at a bonus point yet. And you're like, wait, they're 30-0 up? But, yeah, it's the bloody magic of Yanel kicking penalties.
And he is calling for it, right? And by the time you get into the third penalty, the French crowd are booing him for going for it. And I think that gets to Betson, who's captain, and he stops going for them. But I wish they just kept going, and every penalty they kicked for goal.
That would have been hilarious.
Everything else, they just kept going, because they're just carving Georgia up so effortlessly from about, like, so we get to, like, in the first 10 minutes, they managed to score one try, which is off a line out from a penalty in their own half. Boxes absolutely drills it straight into the opposition half. And off a line out, they run this really lovely move, which is give it to Lionel, who will then throw it 20 meters behind Josion, who's running this, like, lovely arced line. He'll somehow sprint on it perfectly, and the Georgian defence will go, where did Lionel just pass that ball? And Josion just carves it up.
It's
he
a proper
right through.
Piss take by Josion, isn't it?
It is.
The little step he does on the outside is so just like, it's like when you're playing against a five-year-old in touch, but it's like you're playing against, like, your five-year-old little cousin who you want to, like, take the piss out of, like, jokingly.
See, I was thinking the other way. It's like when you're playing touch against someone who's genuinely good, and you're like, oh, this is why I could never be, like, a reasonable standard rugby player. When you're like, oh, this guy is so far above my level of ability. Or this woman in, you know, a couple of cases, like, yeah.
Yeah, sure, sure. That says a lot about both of us. A, that I'm a dickhead who would happily step a five-year-old. And B,
indeed,
that you get stepped a lot by five-year-olds. All good
look,
rugby players.
Look, not by five-year-olds. Generally, I smash five-year-olds.
Yeah, that's
I
true.
I take them on physically and I annihilate them.
Let them know you're there, you know?
Once they get to eight, then they start to step me.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Josion just goes most of the rest of the way, draws and passes, puts Poitrineau away. First try, nice and easy.
Yeah, just lovely. Just vintage France of that era and the era just afterwards.
Yes. Yes. Gigori goes for a really chaotic intercept, which is really funny, where he flies in from miles away, kills an overlap, slaps the ball, like, really far, like 10 meters into the distance, looks up and goes, like, wait a minute, I've got some power on that. And then just goes and fetches the ball, so it's not a deliberate knock-on. It's really satisfying when he eventually catches it, because it was not at all what he was intending to do.
Oh, absolutely not. Abzaridze also managed to hand off Serge Betson successfully.
Yes, he sits him down.
Yeah, which, look, you may be getting some Georgian names if you're listening at home. Erika Abzaridze is the Georgian scrum half.
Yeah.
He's the tallest player by some distance.
Yeah.
He's just, like, look, Georgia was not the older country. They only had, like, four men under 6'5". So, like, you know, he was just the smallest man they'd ever had in Georgia. He was 5'8", still taller than me. But, yeah, he absolutely sits down Serge Betson.
It's brilliant, yeah, off a quick tap. And Serge Betson just kind of has a look on his face, just like, oh, that's not meant to happen.
And yeah, like, Betson looks not even pissed off, just surprised, just lightly surprised.
Yeah, yeah. I then have in my notes, okay, but Boxes is actually pulling the strings.
Yeah, I have a little drawing of some strings being pulled by Lionel Boxes.
Oh, very nice. Great attention to detail, that. David Zirakashvili makes a try-saving tackle on David Marty, which is incredible.
Yeah.
He's a tight-head prop getting across on an outside centre who's genuinely very fast. So that's a really good point for Georgia.
Yeah. At one point, the referee, Alan Lewis, says the clock is perfect. I've got no idea what he's talking about. just sounds like some, like, villain Doctor Who shit.
It sounds like something Antoine Dupont would tweet.
Yes, it does. The clock is perfect. And it's him looking at Big Ben before they play England.
Yeah, exactly. It'd probably be him from inside Big Ben. Because he always pulls off jammy shit like that by being, like, the best rugby player in the world. God, he's so weird. I love him.
Never stop Antoine.
Julien Bonner puts in a beautiful spiral kick from the backfield.
Yes, he does.
Very confusing moment, that.
Look, speaking of beautiful spiral kicks, we've kind of thumbed over how much Leonel Boxes is just, like, drilling it.
He's pulling the strings, man.
I know. It's constantly, like, he is taking the ball and he is just, like, wellying it from, like, the halfway line of the 22. At one point, they pass back into the 22 from, like, halfway, and Boxes is sat so deep in the pocket. But he just, like, because he's in the 22 and he could do this at the time, he just boots it straight out on the full into the opposition 22 and France get the line out there, which is, like, it would be a 50-22, except it wouldn't, because the ball has to bounce first. Yeah. He just put it out on the full in the from 22 to 22.
It's very bizarre, but yeah, I'm so here for it. Merab Kafulu misses a penalty, which is really disappointing. And the Georgian coach already has, like, his hands covering his eyes.
Yeah, he's almost rage crying.
Yeah, just from a missed penalty. And you wish you could just lend them, you know, for a 10-minute spell. I'm sure he'd do perfectly well.
They've got Merab Kafulu, who is perfect. We all know that.
Yes, that is true. That is true. Pierre Mignone gets subbed off because he makes a little break, puts in a grubber, and his hamstring just goes straight away. And somebody comes on from the sideline to put a hairdryer on it, which is very confusing.
The hairdryer treatment.
Yeah, exactly. Lionel Boxis just, like, fully, like, dick out, nails a 55-meter penalty completely needlessly.
What a guy. What a hero.
So unnecessary.
And that is the moment the French crowd starts to boo him. But also, they love it. The moment it goes over, they're, like, losing their shit in celebration. Yeah. But the moment he goes for it, they're like, this is the worst thing that has ever happened to us, Le France.
Oui. I then have written down, hello, Dominici. Can't remember why I wrote that down. But Christophe Dominici is vintage in this game. I really enjoy his contribution. Every single time he gets the ball, he does not accept doing a sensible option.
Yeah, Christophe Dominici is playing like someone who's forgotten how to enjoy himself, trying to enjoy himself.
Yeah. Yes, that is the vibe.
You know, like, it's like when you're really frustrated and, like, focused on something and you're like, no, but I've got to play Mario Kart for an hour in order to calm myself down.
Yeah.
And you're, like, stupidly competitive and you're trying to have fun, but you just can't.
He's really trying to have fun. Every single thing he does. And most of the time it works.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he is a lot of fun to watch, at least.
Mm. Yeah.
But there's a lot of, like he'll go for, like, six in and out side steps and accidentally run into someone, but it's, like, sheer force of will in the moment. We're just carrying through the tackle anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he beats a lot of defenders, not in the way he's intending to.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just grit and determination, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We do then get to France's second try.
Yes.
To George's credit, like, they hang on for, like, only giving away penalties for about half an hour. And then once the dam bursts on that half hour, it goes.
Well, you mentioned giving away penalties, and there's one that is very crucial to this try being scored, as they just go for, like, hands in the rock or something, whatever. And Elissard, in his usual way, takes a quick tap. He bloody loved a quick tap here, and generally does. However, as soon as he goes on his little venture from the quick tap, the Georgian loosehead, Mamuka Magrikovilidze, just sticks his leg out and trips him up. And it is extremely daft.
It's cynical as anything. It's daft.
And he goes to the bin.
It's silly. Yeah. Will Greenwood and Combs has a moment of going, oh, should that be a red card when he's given a yellow? And then clearly it's like, no, it shouldn't be, you know.
Yeah.
It is incredibly blatant. It's incredibly stupid. You kind of wish there was, like, a 15-minute sin bin instead of a 10-minute sin bin.
Yeah, 20-minute red cards. Get him back. Bloody the wokes trying to get people sent off for head contact.
Do you want to know a fact about Magrikovilidze?
Go on.
Do you know where he was playing at the time?
Tarb. Yes!
Tarb. The connection continues.
Oh, mate. All the best people. That's where it's at. It's where it's at. Especially if you're going to get yellow carded.
He won his first cup in 1998. This was his last game for Georgia.
Okay, fair enough. Well, he went out with a bang. Again,
absolutely.
It's much like we were saying about the Samoan hooker. Sefa was his name?
Yes.
Where, you know, we're talking about him.
Yep. His only involvement in rugby was getting sin-binned.
Yeah.
He was on the pitch for 1 minute and got himself sent off.
Exactly.
That is hero shit.
Yeah. And he, we're talking about him now, so it's immediately worth it. But, as you say, France go to the corner and they form a maul. And as you say, there is not much longer Georgia can hold on.
No. The entire Georgian pack piles in. And I think because they're a man down, the hooker does as well, who doesn't stand on the short side. And without Giagadze on that short side, with him in the mall, it's very, very simple for Yannick Nyanga to break off and just run down the short side. And
yeah, he jogs that in, puts it down one-handed so nonchalantly.
It's like the easiest mall try you'll ever see, because they are so committed on defending the mall and stopping it when it starts to get a bit of a rumble on, that they just leave the rest of the field open around it.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty straightforward. So they go out to 23-0, which you kind of don't realise, as I say, how quickly they're building up a score.
Yeah.
When Elisard comes onto this pitch, he chooses chaos straight away. He clearly did not like the way that Pierre Mignoni played that first 15 minutes. It's like, nuh-uh, you're being way too sensible. You have to take way more quick taps. And he throws this insane reverse pass when he gets the ball under a tiny bit of pressure on the line out. And she goes, fine, I'll throw a reverse pass, which no one asked for. And it goes like 2/3 of the way across the pitch. It's incredible.
The key word, I think, that you just used, though, of everything Elisard did on the pitch was, no one asked for this.
Yes!
And like, he's got this air of just like, you're making me do this. And you're like, no, no one needed you to do that chip kick, Elisard.
Yeah.
Shut up, please, let it go. We didn't need this. We didn't ask for this.
He's showing off so much. It's brilliant.
But he's got this air about him of like, he doesn't want to be playing in this stupid game.
No.
He's like, where am I playing? It's Le George. No.
He definitely is carrying himself like, I'm way above this. Like, we're not even playing at Stade de France. I'm the first team player playing in the third team.
He is making business decisions with the ball in hand. But like, he's not in the sense he's avoiding contact. In the decision that like, he's like, fine, I will do the chip kick. Rather than like, I would do the serious option. You know, I'll just do something silly.
He's pure pissing about. It's great.
He really is.
I have written down, Yanel flexes cross kick, brackets, doesn't work.
Yeah, but it's worth it. It's quite the effort. It is pretty close. But Pratchett also names an unbelievable 50-22.
Oh, mate, so 22-22.
Yeah. This is the start of, I think, Clément Pratchett starting to evolve into a reliable player this game.
Yeah.
He's still batshit and he's still doing mental things. And like, I think we talked in the previous episode, like, the thing that goes through my head watching Clément Pratchett of this era is, oh, there are people watching what Ramos is becoming now and what Ramos will probably be in a couple of years' time. I'm just going to see him as like an entirely class fullback.
Yeah.
Because we were kids of an age where Clément Pratchett was always just like a really sensible, reliable fullback who was really, really good for France, one of the best in the world.
I can't remember if I mentioned this on the podcast before, but someone got in touch with me to say Clément Pratchett is coaching Ramos at Toulouse. He is one of the backs coaches of
there. Yeah, he is.
Which totally adds up. As to how Ramos ended up the player.
I remember
when
they played Wasp a couple of years ago, they brought up that moment. Yeah, I can't remember. He said something really funny. That's a great anecdote. I've forgotten it now. Cool. No, but the point is, right? People will forget that Ramos was once utterly mental and unreliable.
Yes.
And just as we did not realize that Clément Pratchett was such. And look, here is like the transition period beginning after he was so unreliable in the previous games.
Yes.
And he's slightly more so now, but not much.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. However, we, speaking of batshitness,
and Clément Pratchett
reach the final try of the first half. And this is so aesthetically pleasing in some ways.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. So there's a passage right before this where, and I think inspired by Elisard coming on, he's just taking a quick tap. And France do like 9 offloads in a row and they make 30 metres. Then one of the Georgians, I think it is Barakalea, comes in and makes a huge shot on someone. And suddenly France continue offloading, but now each one's taking them further backwards. And they then lose 20 of the 30 metres they just made. And they end up basically back exactly where they started, but like 5 metres in front. And it's very funny from like, there's a moment where it looked like completely open and they definitely can score.
I think what makes this such a great and enjoyable game is France not only win 64-7, but about 50% of the shit they did was completely pointless.
Yeah, exactly. But then there's a moment after that where like they end up with a line out and they're like, you know what we just did there? Should we just like try the normal pass instead of offloads? And they spin this ball right out wide and they are floundering Georgia for numbers. They are lacking left, right and centre.
Yes, so it's Rougerie who steps in at 10 and flings the long ball out wide. And you look at this and you go, okay, I see what's on here. It's Christoph Dominici in his complete fun mode. And Dominici really, like, forces an offload, but not in the bad way. He runs into the contact like, oh yeah, I'm going to get a good offload in here. And he just manifests it, I think.
As he did with most things. You know, yes. Dominici mostly manifests things into being.
Sure.
He gets
sure.
it out wide. Betson has a lovely little touch where he manages to time it, give it to Poitrineau, who starts to pin his ears back and head right for the corner.
Yes. And in true Clément Poitrineau in this group stage fashion, Clément Poitrineau just does not fancy scoring this whatsoever. He's already got one. He might as well share the love.
Yeah. So as he's heading for the corner and the Georgian defence is following over to try and keep him in the corner, you know, stop him going on whatever, because he's clearly scoring. Like, there's no way they're preventing him getting him out in the corner, out over the line. He just flicks it back inside to Lionel Bockstein, running the switch for no reason whatsoever.
It's brilliant, especially because Yenel's on the wing for some reason. Who
yeah,
knows what's
why is
there?
He there?
I've no idea, but you know what? Fair play. It means Yenel Bockstein has scored a try to add to his total of just incredible shit he's been doing.
This was his first try for France.
Hmm. I don't imagine he got many.
It was, yeah, the first of many. I think you're fine, actually.
Okay. Oh, never mind then. I've just been done.
Yeah. I can't tell you for certain whether it was his only try or not, but it was his first try. And yeah. that is good enough for me.
Yeah, fair enough. And that does bring up half time at that stage. And that's when you go, wait, 30-0? What's going on here? But you know what? France are good for that lead. They've broken Georgia down and kind of crushed them.
Yeah.
It was
a real sense that,
you know, Boxing's only try for France.
Oh, man. You get a real sense that Georgia's spirit is starting to fade away as that half goes on.
Yeah, yeah. I love that Yenel Bockstein's only try for France was just gifted to him by Clément Poitrineau.
Yeah, he shouldn't have scored it.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Love it. But yes, second half starts. And who should start the second half with a bang? But our boy, once again, Yenel, he's everywhere, man.
He's everywhere. He's here, he's there. He's every mood where.
Yes.
I couldn't think of another French swear.
Yeah, it's close enough. Yeah. Close enough. But he finds himself in the backfield, makes this really sharp break on a kick return, feeds Yannick Nyonga on his inside, and France, on the front foot, instead of scoring a try, because they can do what they want at this point, go for a little grubber to the corner. I think it's Josion puts the grubber in.
It is
indeed. And forces David Zirakashvili to carry the ball into his own owning goal. Not a very well-practiced winger slash fullback is Zirakashvili.
And
all
yet he's
getting
a lot of goes at it in this game.
Yeah. He's
sort of playing as an extra fullback.
Yeah, because there's another try-saving tackle that he made, which I can't remember who it was on, but we've not mentioned. Like, he is just playing as a back three player. He's clearly phoning it in at this point. He knows that this is a pure vibes game. He's not going to get judged for this.
There's another interesting thing around the time of that kick, which is the commentators start discussing the fact that we're looking at a likely, now France basically wrap this game up, France v New Zealand quarterfinal, which we played in Cardiff, the only quarterfinal that's not taking place in France, will be the one involving France. And they say there's a real chance of France going out, the home nation going out, not on the home turf.
Yes.
And they also say the really interesting thing is there will be a coin flip before that game as to who wears which jersey, as to who wears their away kit, who wears their home kit, which is a really interesting thing that you don't think about, like, oh, that was a conversation at the time. Because obviously one of the iconic images of this World Cup, never mind of that quarterfinal to come, is the All Blacks being in their grey kit.
Yeah.
And that throwing things off and then being all like, we don't want to be wearing the grey kit, we're bad. And no, you got to wear your grey kit, you were losers. And that whole, you know, hashtag mind games that goes on there. So it's all kind of a...
It's an interesting thing.
It's an interesting
for that,
yeah.
Isn't it?
It's an interesting kind of moment in rugby history where that was being asked. You know, people basically knew that game was going to happen. They didn't know the circumstances of it. But of course, I would assume that France are now going out.
Yeah. It's, very interesting, as you say, as a moment in history to see. Like, there was a point where people didn't know that was going to happen. Like, it seemed unlikely. And people were very much clinging on to the hope of France getting to a semi-final.
Yeah.
Bizarre. From the resulting scrum 5, or maybe a couple of phases after that, whatever, Yenel puts in a crossfield kick to Christoph Dominici on the far side, who goes for the most showboaty finish that you could possibly imagine. It's great, because he completely ignores Clément Poitrineau on his inside, because Poitrineau's clearly said
as
to him, score it yourself, like, I don't want to score another one, like, go yourself, and he goes
Full
for the step inside.
Kaka.
Yes, full Gillies Kaka, which is a reference that we've brought up before, but for people who have forgotten it, which is everyone, in the 2016 Rio Olympics, Gillies Kaka, playing for New Zealand, just refused to score a try because it didn't count towards his World 7 Series tries. So every time he got over the line, he passed it. And it was really annoying. Like, those points which it was to the detriment, and he passed it further away from the posts, and he was the kicker.
Yeah. Or, like, they would waste time because he, you know, he needed to get a couple of tries in, and he would waste time just, you know, handing it off, waiting for someone else to get near him. Yeah. Refused to score the entire tournament. No idea if that was because it, you know, worked up his tally.
Yeah, I don't really know.
But he was just doing it. It was just a weird, weird character.
So, but Dominici takes that try well.
Dominici takes that try well. Very soon after, Sebastian Bruno gets a try from that maul.
Yeah.
I had
Sebastian
it in my
Bruno, by the way, underrated player, like at French kind of club level, eventually went on to be part of the Toulon kind of Galactico.
Wilkinson and
Co. At the end of his
Habana,
career.
Habana, Gitto.
And he was a really good Bota. Kind of cog in that team, you know?
He was.
He was one of the few players who was French, you know? And wasn't board. Like, yes, exactly. It's kind of those two were the ones who weren't stars in that team.
Yeah.
And yet really like rose up to that point, so, particularly Bruno. Very good player. Great to see him here.
So he was at Sale Sharks at the time.
Oh, was he?
During that era where Sale Sharks had him and they had Jabal and you had Betson playing in Wasps as well. And it was far more kind of cross-pollination. The top 14 wasn't the be-all and end-all as it is now.
Yeah.
So yeah, he was at Sale. He then went back to Toulon in 2009 when he was one of the first of that Galacticos era. You know, that was when Jerry Collins was there for a year. And before Wilkinson signed, he was there before him. He was one of the first players in that project, one of the first players kind of drafted back. Was briefly scrum coach for France during the 2019 World Cup.
Oh, okay.
Has gone back to Lyon now as scrum coach.
Then again, who wasn't scrum coach for France during the 2019 World Cup?
That's true. There was a dog on the pitch that was as well. But yeah, weird career in that he wins most of his caps before he plays most of his rugby.
Yeah.
Like, wins his first cap in 2002, wins his last cap in 2008 under Lee Overmont, and then goes on to play, you know, another like 30 games for Sale beyond that, and then 100 plus games for Toulon.
Yeah.
Which is his longest run at a club. Like, he had
great servant.
50 odd games at Béziers and then, you know, went to Sale and has spent most of his career at Toulon, like more of his career.
That's an excellent club level player.
Yeah.
So I've got time for him. But yeah, good to see him getting the score sheet here. As you say, just a maul. He kind of broke off at the correct time. We're not the right people to analyse this, but well done, Sebastian Bruno.
Yeah.
Also, that's particularly notable because at the start of the second half, for the first like 10, 15 minutes of it, no one can retain their own line out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Georgia's lineout is a shambles the entire day.
Right.
And it sorts out a bit in the second half. But
it starts in France's.
Yeah. But that's it. Like, the lineout sorts out, but like in the wrong direction. It's like a monkey paw wish where like, we want to be winning lineouts and they can only win France's suddenly.
Georgia do at one point, though, run the move off lineout. You know the move.
They do. They run the move, the rugby A4 move.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. You know, throw it to the lock, throw it back to the hooker. Clearly, because it was their only way they could retain the
ball.
This
is the thing, right?
Scraping the
barrel. We need dogs on the pitch to come back. We need Lionel Boxis to come back. We need sign language interpretation for the anthems to come back.
Yes.
We need chickens by the pitch to come back.
Yes.
And we need the move from Rugby A4 to come back.
Indeed.
What
Indeed.
I want to happen in this World Cup is it's a semi-final, right? Wales have won all of their games 3-0. It's been awful to watch, but I've loved it because Warren Ball. It's the semi-final, right? Wales against France.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 2 minutes to go. For the first time, Wales have had points scored against them. It's 3-3.
Because France called up Lionel Boxis inexplicably.
Yes. Wales are on the 22-metre line. They throw into the line out. Everyone is thinking they're going to set up for a drop goal. They're going to try and squeeze a penalty out of a maul or something. You know, they know what's happening.
Or even a little rap move back in field, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Wales throw up to the front jumper, Hugh Sutton, the only second row left standing in Wales at this point. He catches. And right as France preparing to set to defend the maul, Hugh Sutton throws it back down to the hooker, Steve Jones, out of retirement.
Because he's the face of this move.
Yeah.
Warren Gatland thought it's only fair that if we're going to do this move, we might as well call somebody up from Rugby 04.
Yeah.
And Keith Wood isn't qualified.
how old is Steve Jones the hooker? Not Steve Jones, TV presenter. Steve Jones the hooker, who
probably
won five caps for Wales. Last one in 2005. Played for the Dragons for a long time, though. He's a great, almost played almost 200 games for the Dragons. Great.
Why are we talking about him on this podcast? But yeah, so how old is he?
He's 46.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah,
younger than Ken Owens then. Yeah.
So yeah, he'd fit in really well with the age profile of the PVAC squad.
Yeah.
He takes it at the front and he bulldozes over Antoine Dupont, the only defender. Untermack comes across and decides to make a business decision ahead of the World Cup finals playing in next week. Then he remembers, if Steve Jones scores this try, he's not going to be in a World Cup final. Jones bowls him over, scores from the rugby a four move, and the developers are so elated that they greenlight a new game. And EA start making annual rugby games that they put more money into than FIFA, and therefore the EA Sports Football Club as it is now. And so rugby starts to grow and grow and grow across the globe. Rugby explodes. Chile go on to win three World Cups. The USA start to be good because they've now got a video game to play. All gamers take up rugby as a sport. And rugby now becomes bigger than Splatoon. And therefore Japan are even better at it because Splatoon is absolutely massive in Japan.
And Boxies marries the girl.
He already has, mate.
Exactly.
They've been married for like 15 years.
Exactly.
We already had a happy ending there.
Exactly.
That's what I want to happen in this World Cup.
Is Boxies to get married again?
Yeah.
To the same woman?
Yeah. I want, you know, Boxies and his wife to appear at every game and do like a little little wave like the Queen does, you know, when she pops up.
Yeah, not quite Jack and Maria levels, but...
No. Well, you know, like when Princess Anne comes out and shakes hands with Evan Murrayfield?
Yeah.
I want
they
Lino Boxies to do that.
Boxies.
Yeah. Boxies and Yare should do that before every single game in the World
Cup. Look, why have they not left us in charge of the Rugby World Cup planning? Because between that and dogs on the pitch, we've got this sorted.
I think so. I don't think you need anything else.
No.
You know, I don't think you need like stadiums to play the games in.
Nah, who cares
just
about
go
that?
Go down the park, you get more dogs.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect. So I'm going to just quickly mention something. So last year, right, in May... we went to go and see Half Man Half Biscuit perform at Rock
COVID.
City in Nottingham. And we both caught COVID, I think, at that gig.
Yeah.
But yeah, we went to see Half Man Half Biscuit and they were a lot of fun. You know, they were exactly what you expect of Half Man Half Biscuit, right? But possibly the highlight of the entire gig for me was not Joy Division Oven Gloves and was not them singing the line Ground Control to Monty Don, which is probably my favourite opening lyric in any song in history. But it was, in fact, that they went off for the encore, like an ironic encore, which is a rare thing. They went off for the encore, and then they came back on, and instead of playing any songs, they just started talking about both Nottingham Forest and Notts County players from years gone by, and going like, oh, Robert Earnshaw, what a great striker he was, and talking to each other, and bring up some Notts County player from like the 1980s, and going like, oh, John Harris, though, he was a great player, he was really solid in defence, and they just went on a conversation like that, and it was
obviously
so
completely
funny.
One-sided.
Yes.
He wasn't talking to anyone in the audience. He was just a monologue about players from Nottingham that he remembered.
Yeah, yeah.
You're putting too much energy into this as well. It was very casual. It was very throwaway. It was like, oh, Bob Jones, good player.
Yeah. And it was really, really
funny.
What's
the name of that striker you had back in like 84?
Yeah, he was asking members of the audience, you know. And he was saying like, oh, and you know, we are looking out for both Forest and County, you know, we're not taking sides here, you know. It was great. It was
great.
Really, really funny.
His little ramblings were much more fun than the actual mute. Like, there's not saying if he went to Half Man Half Biscuit, I'm a big fan.
Oh, and they were great.
Him going and telling an anecdote about buying a disappointing Tesco meal deal and then sitting in Waterton Park with his kids was really funny in a way that, like, that's like getting an exclusive Half Man Half Biscuit song that no one will ever hear again.
Yes, and telling the audience to nip round to his nan's house and giving out the address and saying, if you tell him I sent you, she'll make you a cup of tea, which is hilarious. But anyway, right, the reason why I bring this up, that conversation about football with the crowd, that monologue, is because at one stage on the commentary, Will Greenwood just has that exact same conversation and completely unprompted just starts listing a load of French players from the mid to late 1990s and goes, oh, Christophe Lemaison had a very big right boot on him, and we all knew the dangers that he possessed. Philippe Bernard Sal, oh, he was the captain back then, and he had a really good set of feet on him. Patrice Le Bon, what a great, handsome devil, and had silky offloading, just as silky as indeed his hair. Jean-Luc Sardinet, oh, who could forget the tries that he scored back in the day? Oh, what a fantastic player. And meanwhile, John Champion in the commentary box is clearly just looking at him, just kind of, are you about done?
Are you done? Can we move on now, Will? I almost played a game on this podcast with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I might play it very quickly since you've led it onto very, very neatly.
Okay.
So I don't know if you saw, the Telegraph have just published an article of Will Greenwood talking about every single player from the England squad in Steve Borthwick's England squad for the World Cup.
Jesus Christ. Okay.
I want to read you at random some of the things that Steve Borthwick said about a member of the current England squad for the 2023 Rugby World Cup.
Will Greenwood has.
Guess who he's talking about. Yep.
Okay.
Okay. We got called Dad's Army in 2003. Oh,
Jesus Christ.
This lot have plenty of experience.
Dan Cole.
Going through, no. A proper old guard with the nastiest, gnarliest mongrels they can pick. This guy is front and centre of that. This is the nastiest, gnarliest mongrel in England, in that England squad. Who do you think of when you think of that?
Ellis Genge?
No. Jamie George.
Jamie George, okay.
Eddie moved him to fullback, and Steve wants him on the ball as much as possible, leading and snarling. It's a big World Cup for him. Can he prove himself on the international stage? Domestically, he has bossed it.
Elliot Daly?
No.
Oh, what? Freddie Stewart?
No.
Anthony Watson?
No.
Max Malins?
No.
What?
I've skipped the first sentence in this.
Henry Arundel? But
no.
Who the fuck is left that plays fullback? Who is it?
Okay, the first sentence is Ellis would have been close to full-time captain. Surely.
What?
Ellis Genge. Because he played in the backfield against France that once.
Oh, right. Okay. What?
Yep. This is a good one on Bevan Rodd. We come from the same boarding house in the same school. So take my admiration with a pinch of salt. But his breakdown work is brilliant. And let's do one more. Okay, here's an easier one, right? In the great lock combos, one's the battering ram. Even in this hybrid world, I like 120kg second rows who smashes things, and he can play. Remember that offload against New Zealand?
Oh, Dave Ribbons.
Dave Ribbons. Okay, this is another good one. In football, managers that are drafted into tricky situations hit the transfer market and pick up old favourites. Blank player's name is mobile and has scored tries. If you have older guys in the front row, he balances things. He reminds me a lot of Shannon Frizzell.
So is this about a back rower?
No.
It's about a front rower?
No.
It's about a back?
No.
A second rower then?
Yeah.
Courtney Laws?
No.
Mauro Toje?
No.
George Martin?
No.
The other one?
Ollie Chesham.
Okay, yeah.
There's a random anecdote about football managers, followed Great by stuff. Chesham has scored tries. I'm sure he has. But I can't think of them.
Here's the thing.
I think he was on for Leicester. I don't think he scored for England. I might be forgetting that very obviously because my brain is so leaky.
Yeah, he did score against Italy.
He did. Okay. He has scored tries.
Here's the thing, though. Will Greenwood has gone insane in the last 16 years.
He is mostly cocaine at this point.
Yeah. And I've very much enjoyed him in this World Cup 2007.
Yeah. He's much better.
Yeah.
But you can still see what he goes on to become.
Sure. Sure. And by the way, that whole monologue about just French players was over the top of frustrated winger Malkaz Urgukashvili randomly going for a drop goal because he was pissed off that his team were going for like quite a coherent set of pick and goes.
Yes.
And really wanted to just do something. And he just attempts a drop goal from 40 metres and it doesn't hit the target.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of enjoyed that. I'm kind of all here for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm so here for it.
I wish that Georgia went for more just really long sequences of pick and goes. Because they're making yardage, right? And like at one point, Georgia do an inside ball from a forward and they make 10 meters at once. And you're like, holy shit, what just happened? It's the best attack of the tournament, doesn't involve an interception.
Yeah, it is very strange when they try and do something other than a pick and go, Georgia.
Because it's all they are. You know, they make 10 meters in one go and there must have been like bloody hell, we can do that.
And that's the thing, that France clearly just look at this and just go like, right, okay, if we just pile everyone around the contact area, we're also fat bastards, so we can live with this. We can just give them 10 metres and that's it. Cash in from there.
Shortly after that, Elisard does an absolutely gorgeous moment. It's like the one moment of him, like, he still has that, like, nonchalant, like, I hate the day I'm playing into this game, but if you want me to be class, I shall be class. Where he scoops the ball after a terrible pass up off his toes, and he looks up, sees the Georgian defences up very flat, and dinks this gorgeous kick in behind right at the 22.
Yeah, for Christophe Dominici to run onto once again, who makes a phenomenal pickup.
Yeah,
on this, like, from
and has to like
bases.
Adjust. Like, the ball does not bounce in his path. He has to run inwards and change his line completely in order to regather it. It's absolutely fantastic as a finish, and it's brilliant as a kick.
Yeah, and he uses his momentum of the pickup to then slide in for the try. It's brilliant.
I would say try of the day.
I would not disagree. It's certainly up there.
Lionel Nale scores a really boring try where they get scrum five from box east being unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they just like sort of do like a pick and go that turns into a maul, and eventually Nale falls over and scores.
Yeah.
Third try of the tournament.
Mm. That's again Nale just being a big fat bastard and being very good at that.
Yeah.
Big fan of Lionel Nale.
Interesting that happens immediately after that, though. Remy Martin comes on.
Yeah, and not only does he come on, he scores.
Yeah, so I remember Remy Martin. I did not remember him looking like this.
Yeah, well, I only remember Remy Martin from the first game of this tournament. I don't really remember watching him play.
I remember him playing. I remember him being a player that existed.
Mm, you know, I recognise his name.
Yeah, and obviously, like, a lot of the time I was watching him, obviously he had a period at Montpellier, but he spent a lot of it in the Pro Day, duh. But I remember him. I remember there being a French player called Remy Martin. You know, I don't remember his French career much.
Yeah,
but I don't remember him being this like proto Richie Gray, shaggy second row who kind of runs around being mad.
I have like no opinions on Remy Martin.
I think he's really fun in this game. But like not necessarily in great ways. But like you're like, oh, it's the massive guy with the shaggy hair again. Okay, cool. Let's do that.
Yeah.
His try is
lovely,
on,
by the way.
Yeah, and 2 minutes after coming onto the field, he finishes this really lovely flowing move. He's running a lovely support line.
Yeah,
takes it, runs it in, like does an embarrassing dive. We're trying to do a far better dive.
Yeah.
Perfect, perfect. Back row who can play lock shit.
Yeah, from a Josion rip on a kind of choke tackle type thing. Dominici getting it wide when he really wanted something to open up for himself so he could go for a hat trick, but sadly jug avoidance it is for you, Christophe.
Around this period as well, we have so Georgia struggling in the scrum for most of this game, which is unlike, you know, players of the caliber they have in that pack.
Yeah,
but at one point the referee calls over Chevalidze, their replacement hooker, as well as, you know, the two props, but it's mostly speaking to Chevalidze, the hooker.
Yes,
and I am a big fan of this conversation.
So Alan Lewis is the referee here.
Yes.
And he does do quite a lot of telling off here. Like early in the second half, there's a point where he warns Meiseradze and says, be very careful or I might have to yellow card you. At which stage, like Elisard tries to take a quick tap and looks really pissed off at Alan Lewis for warning the opposition and to give him a yellow card, which any other scrum half would be like, yeah, absolutely. You know, you should send him off now, sir. But he's fuming at the fact that Alan Lewis has had the audacity to talk to the opposition player and warn them to stop them giving away penalties. But yes, so that is the lead up for this. Yeah.
He calls Chevalidze over and he says 3 times, I'm going to be very clear, very slowly, as though he's trying to give instructions to a foreign tourist on where they want to go, on how they get to the bibliothèque. He says, I'm going to be very clear. He says, I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help you, but you must play. And he's like very slowly, like shaping his lips very carefully. And the Georgian hooker's like nodding at him. And he says, you must play within the rules of the game. You must play within the laws. And Chevalidze, the hooker, goes, okay, and then walks off.
But then Alan Lewis calls him back and he says, trust me, within the context of this game, I'm trying to help you. And that was what he sent him away with. And then, like, Chevalidze again kind of, like, winks at him, like, all right, okay. So you're going to award us some points. Like, you're on our team. You're being biased to us. And like Alan Lewis pretty much basically just admits that. And I'm here for it.
He's like, I'm sympathy reffing now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, I need you to know this, but like there is a limit.
Yeah, yeah, because Georgia Discipline is shite. Yes. Like there is not much sympathy reffing he can do.
I am just a huge fan. I spent the rest of the half saying in the way the Chevaledze says it. Okay.
Okay.
Look back at him going, okay.
It's brilliant. It's so good.
You must play within the laws. Okay.
Alan Lewis just admittance that he's being biased to the losing team because they're losing by that much. In the World Cup, where points difference is a thing, like that's really funny.
And the best thing is, right, we're skipping forward like 3 or 4 minutes, but the following time France get down into the Georgian 22, they don't help him out at all. It's like they didn't take the okay on at all. As we have the most... Send him off, you dirty get! Moment
of the
whole World Cup. I think this is right up there in terms of the biggest cunts tricks that have been pulled in this World Cup. And we talked on last week's episode about Akpusi and Guerra just clean off kicking Stephen Jones. This, I think, is like notably worse. I think this is like the most horrible, hideous bit of shithousery, brackets negative, brackets derogatory of this whole tournament.
Yes. So... the culprit is Otar Elashvili, who is number 21 for Georgia, has just come on, and the first thing he does is he sees Remy Martin and puts in what starts off as quite a good tackle on him. Making.
Yeah. So, France have, by this point, time has been called off. And has received the ball, time's been called off. I think there's a player out of touch, in touch. He's flicked it back inside to Martin.
Yes.
And Elashvili has come in. He's just come off the pitch. He's come in to like make the tackle, but you know, like he knows he doesn't have to commit to it. There's Gagari, the starting 13, comes in and like joins him in the tackle. The two of them together. Gagari is going like, okay, whistle's gone. You know, we'll pull out of this. And at that moment, knowing that they've got a solid contact, the two of them, Elashvili goes for the dirtiest bit of like cheap shot cunt trick imaginable.
He spear tackles Remy Martin. Yeah,
he lifts him. Like, he has a moment, you can see it on the like, slow motion replay, like red mist descending for literally no reason.
Yeah.
And he picks him up and he drives him into the ground. Like, it's not just like a casual spear tackle. The whistle has gone. He picks him up and he drives this guy's head into the floor.
Yeah. It's, as you say, it is a cunt trick. It's not nice. And Alan Lewis looks at that and goes, all right, yellow card then, is it? On the recommendation of his touch judge, I will add. But the worst thing is, he gives the yellow card to the wrong guy.
Yeah, because the two players going in for that tackle, he gives it to Gagari.
You know what's even more mental? Gagari wasn't the assist tackler there.
Was he not?
No, he wasn't even involved. It was Bakalaya was the other tackler involved.
So he's just been completely the wrong
guy.
He's
just seen the wrong guy.
He's trying to help you.
Yeah. And has just gone, well, you can go to the bin. And Gagari looks so baffled when he goes off.
Yeah. And I mean, like, look, he's really lucky to get away with a... I mean, he obviously got away with no card. A yellow card's lucky. He goes on to receive a 7-week ban for the spear tackle.
Yeah.
Which feels soft,
that's
right?
That's very soft.
I think
very
nowadays soft. It would be much harsher. You know, head contact and everything else.
You'd hope.
However, the positive of this, really, is he was never called up by Georgia again.
Right, okay. Yeah.
He didn't retire. Yeah. It wasn't his decision. He never got in the team again.
Yeah, that's
He was 28.
Shite.
Yeah, he went on to play he dropped down the French leagues after that, but went on to play until 2013. But yeah, didn't play for Georgia.
Proper Val Mahina of a way to end your career.
It really is. And yet he got away with it. He got to play the last 10 minutes of the game after that. Disgusting, disgusting bullshit.
Yeah, send the dirty gets off.
Like, and the other thing is, right, like, the incident is so violent as well that Alan Lewis piles in to start a fight.
Yeah, he's involved in the fight. It's hilarious.
So, Elashvili dumps this guy and his, like, Remy Martin on his head. It's disgusting. The French players go like, like, you know, all get mad at him and start to pile in at him. So Alan Lewis goes and, like, charges in shoulder first and, like, tackles and gets Elashvili out the way so he can't be a part of this fight.
He's sticking up for his team, Georgia, and saying, you get your hands off my boys.
Yeah. But like, he basically like piles in and grabs Ellis. Like, he is holding Ellis by the shoulders and like pulling him out of the fight as though he's the one that's gone in first. Like, he's the first person to engage, and he starts the fight before the French players can get there.
Incredible.
It is incredible. Okay.
Okay. Yeno throws a pass into touch, and I just thought, yes, he's back. That's my boy.
Yo.
My boy. And my favorite Yeonel moment was, like, I've written Yeonel in like block capitals, like really big text, because at one point he has a 3v2 in the opposition 22 and he just lamps the ball into the air and completely like just doesn't pay any mind to what the conventional thing that is good to do in rugby is. And obviously, like, they don't score off it. Like, he technically bombs the chance, but because it's Yeonel Boxis, it's better than scoring a try.
Yeah, of course. We should talk about George's try.
Yes, speaking of the whole Alan Lewis situation, this is really funny. So he gives Georgia a penalty inside the French 22 after another sequence of pick and goes, and a really good kick by Sam Karadza to put them into position, like near 50-22. And as Mysa Radza, the replacement back row forward, has the ball in his hands, he's trying to find the mark to go for the quick tap from. And Alan Lewis is like directing him. And he says, yeah, go on. And like really eggs him on to take the quick tap. Clearly just doing a little bit of coaching whilst refereeing.
Yeah. Very much like driving him towards taking this tap. And sure enough, Mysa Radza, the flanker, takes the quick tap, charges on this like diagonal angle, and somehow comes out with a try.
Yeah, he battered his way over. And like the whole time as Alan Lewis is coming around to find the angle, like he's got one arm in the air and he's like, please let me blow this whistle. I'm so glad that they finally got a try. And then he awards it really quickly.
It's glorious. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. The Boxis does a chip and David Skrella like fluffs a try scoring chance as we get towards the end of the game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so my favourite moment from this last passage of French attack is... Van Sinclair steps in at fly half and goes for a cross kick himself.
Yeah.
Like, he goes like, I can do that. Anyone can do this.
We've been practicing and training this week. That's fine.
I bet I can do it the other way around. It doesn't go well. He put it out in the ball. It's terrible, but it's very, very funny.
Yeah. That's great.
In fact, no, that is what leads to the violent incident. It leads to Martin's. Yeah, it's Claire going for a cross kick himself. And like, obviously that goes out. And like, so they can't tap it back in field and everything. And yeah, violence. However, France do get the ball back. And you know what happens?
What happens?
They spin it right out to Julien Bonnaire.
Yes. But Yannick Younger chimes his pass really well here. And Bonnaire is... both commentators immediately say Bonnaire really deserves that try.
Yeah.
Which he does.
He does.
He's been really solid all game. Hangs out on the wing. Does a little step inside and finishes it very powerfully. It's very nice.
Yeah, the number eight era of Julien Bonnaire.
Indeed.
Yeah, just a fantastic player, really well taken try, and brings down the curtain on this particular game of rugby.
And
full stage. And with it, Georgia's World Cup.
Yes. Put on the song Georgia by Phoebe Bridgers.
I've got Georgia by Vance Joy.
Okay.
It came
okay.
up before it.
Yes. So, Georgia, they have been great company in this World Cup.
They have.
I think that they've had a very specific style of play, which wouldn't work these days. But I think for what 2007 was, it was great to see a team who had such a defined identity.
Yeah, and this is the start of the Georgia we now know and love, you know? Mm. We've talked about this a lot over the Horse podcast, but this is them rising and getting to a position which they can be where they are now, where they're beating England and Wales.
Yeah.
And a lot of that comes from this World Cup, from the belief it gave, and also from the inspiration for the rest of the world, where Georgia was quite a young country at this point, as we say. Like, there are players playing in this game that were playing in matches right after they declared independence. Like, the country's been around for 18 years, so that's almost nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And so you then see there are players in the modern team who took up rugby as a result of watching this Georgian team, you know? You have the same story for Niku Amichashvili, Amichakele, exact same story, you know, of being... watching that Ireland game and taking up rugby as a result. And then obviously, you know, taking refereeing from there. It's just such a vital moment in Georgian rugby history and in European rugby history, indeed, that world rugby can't be allowed to squander by keeping them out of the, you know... The
you said it.
World Cup.
Yes.
Non-World Cup test matches.
Sure. In terms of the Georgian specific team of this tournament, I think some of the players that have really impressed me. I think Georgi Chkaidze in the back row has been so good as a carrier.
Yeah.
Was sadly quite anonymous in this game playing number eight, but I rate him really highly here. Ilya Zdenidze, how high he has gone up in my estimations off the back of this tournament has been next level, because he went to 2011 and I didn't really notice him. But here, he's the captain and he's like, he's the talisman. He's incredible.
I agreed. I think he's absolutely fantastic. I was going to mention him as one of my first players. Georgi Skinnin as well.
Georgi Skinnin,
who obviously doesn't play in this game, but will be remembered forever. For as long as the Rugby World Cup is a thing, his try against Ireland will be remembered and will be shown and will be talked about.
Yeah,
and rightly so. He is like one of Georgia's best players legitimately this tournament. It isn't just the top one moment that we thought it was going to be.
He's the most fun, for sure.
Yeah. Urjukashvili, I think, is fantastic as well.
Urjukashvili is somebody I think we've both always rated, but like, great seeing him kind of more, a bit more in his prime.
I was going to say, it's kind of at his peak, isn't it?
And I think that, to be honest, I think the standout player in this whole tournament for me, and people will not be surprised to hear me say, other than maybe David Zirkashvili, who's very, very good, even at this level. Like, he's always been great, consistent world-class prop. But I think people who have listened to the other Georgian episodes of this will not be surprised to hear me say, Iraki Makineli.
Yeah.
He is so good, makes such an impact in every game he plays. As I say, another player who I remember watching, but did not realise how bloody good he was until watching his tournament.
I think the other Iraqi, Giagadze, is also very good, 12.
Yes, yes.
Big fan as of is Grayordi Labadze in the back row as well. Misses this game injured, but it's fantastic. We also should mention this young second row they had called Mamuku Godze.
Indeed.
Who is enormously impactful in the first few games.
He was in the process of going places.
It's really interesting, actually, when you look at this team, the players that go on to be part of, you know, great Georgian teams down the line. David Kasharava is himself, but he's not necessarily one of the standout players. Same with Mero Kovarikashvili, who's very up and down.
Yeah, but as I say, those guys all do go on to become greats of Georgian rugby. So,
yeah,
good to see them in the making.
But yeah, really good Georgian team. Really a pleasure to watch them. And an interesting point in rugby history to be filling in and looking at.
For sure, for sure.
So, should we do man of the match first?
Yes, let's do it. So, there's a few players I've got written down. One is Alan Lewis. I think he's excellent for Georgia. I think he really helps them pull the finger out in the second half. Elisalde is batshit, and I love it. Nyanga is a player that we've not mentioned quite how much he does, but he has like an indirect involvement probably in the majority of the tries and makes a load of breaks and so on. Yannick Jozion, pretty much the same story as Nyanga. But my man of the match, and I'm not being just living up to the hype here, but it's Lionel Boxis.
Yes,
he's incredible.
So I have one player jotted down, and it is Lionel Boxis.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
And it is,
those are all sympathy votes.
Unironic. It is entirely serious. Lionel Boxis is the best player on the pitch. He's so good. He's ridiculously good. The shape and structure he puts in the game whilst also being a player who can command the attack is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, he is absolutely brilliant. It's one of the best fly half displays of the entire tournament. And I know it's playing against a Georgian team who can't really be bothered and are knackered and, you know, like, don't play very well at all.
Yeah.
But he's absolutely fantastic. Unironic, he's phenomenal. This is the yo-yo very much like at the height, at the top of its
absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely. No, we're in full agreement there about Yenel. In terms of Dick of the Day, I have to go for Otar Elashvili, right?
Yeah.
And it's not even for the spear tackle. It's for the fact that Gigari got sent off and he was just like, yeah, all right, sound. And just let him get sent off. Like, well, take the bullet, mate.
So I was at a very similar manner. I want to give Elashvili cunt of the day because it is an utter cunt's trick and good riddance on him in his international career if that's the kind of shit he does the moment he comes on. But I was going to give Alan Lewis dick of the day for the exact same thing.
I mean, that's also fair.
You know,
Alan Lewis, I think he's great in this game and I'm a big fan of him as a ref, but he does kind of deserve dick of the day in this game.
Yeah. He takes his second vote at the tournament as dick of the day.
Oh, brilliant.
So... yeah, we've now got a dick of the tournament, frontline contender.
There we go.
Unless we declare Clive Woodward dick of the tournament.
Yeah, we'll get
there. The referee. Yeah.
Hey, there's another like 10 games left.
There is. So, that brings us to an end. Hopefully that was less than 2 hours. I don't think it was. But I'll see you, William Owen, soon. And I'll see the listeners also soon. For we will be back next week for Ireland against Argentina. There are only two games left at the pool stage. We had originally been going to try and rush through them all and do them all before the World Cup. That is completely unrealistic. Would have been ridiculous.
We literally don't have the time to do it. Like, literally neither of us physically have enough hours between now and the World Cup to be able to do that.
Considering we've got to get bloody how many other videos done as well. And also I've got to finish planning the logistics for going to France, and you're going to like two festivals, and I've got to go to Edinburgh for a few days. Yeah. And I'm also doing like a thing for like, it's just not working.
But we'll come back to the knockouts after the World Cup, which is unfortunate. It's not the way we want to do it. We wish we could rattle through these, but we physically can't. And it's really upsetting, obviously, to have to park it. But you know what? We've got a couple of really enjoyable group games still to come. Yep. So that's a very exciting thing to look forward to.
So yeah, so we've got two more episodes to go. Argentina, Ireland, South Africa, USA, which we should have a guest on for.
Fingers crossed.
Then we will maybe do a little retrospective, maybe just look over those games quickly.
Mm.
And also we've got a plan for the podcast when we head into the real Rugby World Cup that will all become very clear soon down the line in soon months' time, soon days' time, soon weeks' time. It's really close now, the World Cup. But yeah, we'll see you very soon for that. In the meantime, I desperately hope that you have a bootalicious day and you remain very, very booty full and enjoy a little bit of Him Francais.
Ye are now, boxes.
Ye are now.
All right. M, c'est la prof. Rappelle-toi en 99. On bat les blacks et on perd cette coupe. Hey, Mr. Joe, c'est bien toi en 2003. On est les meilleurs. On perd quand même contre ces putains de rugby. Right now, 2007, en France. Et puis champion du monde.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.